Turn to the book of Luke, chapter 23. Book of Luke, chapter 23. We'll read verses 44 through verse 49. And it was about the sixth hour, and there was a darkness over all the earth until the ninth hour. And the sun was darkened, and the veil of the temple was rent in the midst. And when the Lord Jesus had cried with a loud voice, he said, Father, into thy hands I commend my spirit. And having said thus, he gave up the ghost. Now when the centurion saw what was done, he glorified God, saying, Certainly, this was a righteous man. And all the people that came together to that sight, beholding the things which were done, smote their breasts and returned. And all his acquaintance and the women that followed him from Galilee stood afar off, beholding these things. What we have here is a part of the record of what transpired at Golgotha or Calvary, what transpired on the cross. Golgotha or Calvary was the place, of course, where the Romans put guilty criminals to death by means of crucifixion. It was a place where guilty criminals would meet their gruesome fate. It was the place where the demands of the law, the laws of the land, were carried out. The place where the consequences of a broken law were met. It was a place of punishment. It was a place of great suffering. It was a place of torture, a place of misery, a place of sorrow. And of course, it was a place of execution. It was a place of condemnation, a place of curse, a place of death. The place of Golgotha always meant a sure and agonizing death. No one left that place alive. It was a certain death. It was a place of great humiliation, a place of indignity, a place of great disgrace. It was a place of horror, a very dreadful and appalling place. It was a place where the most wicked of men were led, the most filthy of men. It was a place where, again, people met the consequences or faced the consequences of their sins. And now we see Jesus, the Holy One, the Pure One, the perfect one, the absolutely spotless one, the one with no blemish, undefiled, faultless, without any sin, absolutely impeccable. And he is brought, or he is led to this place. Jesus, the one who did no wrong to anyone, the one who brought more cheer and more hope and more relief to mankind than any other, whose life was nothing but love, he's brought to this place. Brought to this place where the most violent and dishonest of men have been brought. brought to this place where thieves and murders have been brought. But he is not there because he's guilty of any crime. He is not there because he has broken or violated any law. But he is there voluntarily. He is there because he wants to be. He is there for the sins of his people. He is there with the sins of his people. And he is in the place and stead of his people. And as you see him there again, he who has done no wrong is dying the death of a criminal. Thousands and thousands of times, the Romans had paraded the guilty to this place. And all the stories that could be told about Calvary. The stories that could be told of those who were led to this place. But the greatest and most amazing and the most mystifying and the most memorable story that can be told about this place is the day that Jesus went to that place. We need to behold often Jesus at that place. And we need to remind ourselves that he went there willingly, that he went there readily. He went there intentionally. He went there on purpose. And he went there gladly. Coming to our text, in verse 44, we read that it was about the sixth hour, which is noon. And there was, notice it doesn't say there was darkness over the land. That's not what it says. It says there was a darkness. I believe that's a special darkness. He didn't just say there was darkness, there was a darkness. This was a darkness unlike any other darkness. There was a darkness over all the face of the earth. Not just at that place, but over all the face of the earth. And this darkness lasted until the ninth hour, which is about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. In verse 46, we come to the last moments of Christ upon the cross. And we read that Jesus cried with a loud voice. And then we're told what he said. Father, into thy hands I commend my spirit. And having said thus, and then we're told he did something. He gave up the ghost. So what we read here are the last words and the last act of Christ upon the cross. And we want to center our thoughts around these last words and this last act of Christ upon the cross. I want to speak this morning on Jesus' dying last word and action for us. Because what he did on that cross was for us. These last words are for us. This last action is for us. There are many profound lessons learned at this place called Golgotha or Calvary. Both the events and the words all around that cross, not just from Jesus, but everything that was going on around that cross, teach us many truths, not all pleasant, shows much about the nature of man. But more specifically, we learn great lessons from the actions and the words that came from Christ's mouth as he was on that cross. Up to the time of our text, there had been countless individuals who had come to this place of crucifixion. And no doubt many of them, probably most of them, had dread and fear upon their faces. Many, if not most, had probably pleaded for their lives. Many, if not most, probably claimed their innocence. And many, if not most, cursed their accusers. But Jesus was different than all who had ever come to this place. And as you look at Jesus, there is no dread, there is no fear upon his face. There is no pleading for his life. Never once did he plead for his life. There is no claiming of his innocence. Though he is innocent, he did not claim his innocence. And you can read it over and over and over, the account of the cross. There was no cursing of his accusers. While Jesus Christ hung upon that cross, 7 times we hear him speak from that cross. There was, first of all, a prayer for forgiveness. He said, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." And I believe that had its fulfillment on the day of Pentecost when the 3,000 were saved. There was a word of salvation to one of the thieves. He said, "Today, thou shalt be with me in paradise." He looked upon Mary and John, and he spoke a word of affection to them. He said, "Woman, behold thy son." And to John he said, "Behold thy mother." There was a word of anguish spoken to God. He said, my God, why hast thou forsaken me?" That was at the beginning of that 3 hours of darkness. There was also a word of suffering spoken to the people when he said, "I thirst." There was also a word of victory when he said, "It is finished." But now we come to the last words of Jesus Christ on the cross. And they are words of contentment. "Father, into thy hands I commend my spirit." These are words of profound impact. Words of great blessing. Words of much instruction. And again, we want to consider these last words. "Father, into thy hands I commend my spirit." And we want to consider his last act. He gave up the ghost. Doesn't say that he died, though he did. It says he gave up the ghost. His death was voluntary. No one could take his life from him. But these last words and this last act is of momentous weight. They serve as an example to you and I living life. Notice in 1 Peter chapter 2, verses 21 through 23. For even hereunto were ye called, because Christ also suffered for us, leaving us an example that ye should follow his steps, who did no sin, neither was guile found in his mouth, who when he was reviled, reviled not again. When he suffered, he threatened not, but notice, but committed himself to him that judgeth righteously. I believe this is referring to our text. And the cross is presented as a behavioral example. Christ's words are mentioned, and his last act is particularly mentioned here in 1 Peter. We want to consider today four points concerning these last words and this last action. And they ought to serve as a pattern for you and I in living life. First of all, we see he's in communion with the Father. The first and last words from the cross begin with Father. The very first thing he said from the cross was, Father, forgive them. The very last thing he said from the cross was, Father, I commend my spirit into thy hands. So in the first and the last word from the cross, he speaks to the Father. He speaks to the Father. In the first and last words from the cross, there is communion with the Father. In these first and last words, Jesus is praying. Father, forgive them. That's a prayer. Father, I commend my spirit. Again, he's in communion with God. Throughout his life, we see him in prayer. His life was a life of communion with God. And he lived in communion with God, and he died in communion with God. He lived praying, and he died praying unto the Lord. And oh, what an example that is. With the first and last words from the cross being words of prayer, that means that everything else he said from the cross were bracketed, if you will, or bookended by prayer, by communion with God. So all that transpired upon the cross, horrific things, all that transpired upon the cross was bookended by prayer and communion with God. What an example to you and I. Our hearts and our lives and all our days should be bookended with prayer. Beginning the day with prayer, ending the day with prayer. Life consists, of course, of all kinds of responsibilities. We all have responsibilities. There are privileges in life that come our way. There are opportunities. We're all faced with decisions. We have goals. We have hopes. We have expectations. We have friends, we have enemies, we have relationships, we have families, we have careers, and all of these things take place in a variety of places and circumstances. But it all needs to be bookended by prayer and communion with God. And oh, what a difference that will make. These first and last words of Christ from the cross really ask us a question. Is there a demeanor, a trajectory, and habit of prayer in our lives? He's placed upon that cross is uplifted, and he says, "My Father." After he goes through everything on that cross, we hear him again, "My Father." This was his habit, to be in communion with God. So in the first and last words upon the cross, Christ brings himself to the Father. He brings himself to the Father. The very word, Father, he's bringing himself to God. What an example. And again, such raises the question, is it our impulse, is it our habit of life to bring ourselves to God? To bring ourselves to God. You cannot have communion with God if you do not bring yourself to God. You cannot have communion with God being separated from Him. There's a union. And we see it ought to be our impulse, it ought to be our habit to bring ourselves to God. In these first and last words of Christ from the cross, Father, where's his focus? His focus is upon God. And again, what a lesson that is for us, and it raises the question, is it our habit of life to be focused upon God? What does it take to get you focused upon God? It shouldn't take anything. It shouldn't take a set of circumstances to get you focused upon God. The fact that God saved our soul ought to cause us to be focused upon Him. Every day. Every moment. So you look at these first and last words of Christ upon the cross. Look at them as bookends. Look at them as brackets. And everything between them is life. Everything in between the first and the seventh saying, Father, is life. And everything in between is all the happenings of life. And our life needs to be bookended, bracketed, if you will, with prayer unto God. Bringing ourselves to God with our hearts and minds focused upon the Lord. All that God would help us to live that way. Secondly, we see here a word and an act of contentment, confidence, and love. Hear Jesus say, Father, into thy hands I commend my spirit. And after hearing him say that, see him as he gave up the ghost. Jesus was on that cross, surrounded by a taunting crowd. And his body was suffering intense agony. But there was a state of security, a state of knowledge, a state of confidence, and an absolute assurance that all is well. Father, into thy hands I commend my spirit. That's assurance. That's contentment. We live in a world with an abundance of obstacles. We face opposition all the time. There's storms, there's anxieties, there's commotion, there's chaos. problems and difficulties, battles, there's darkness, there's helplessness, there's much futility, there's failure, there's exhaustion, there's weakness, there's disappointment, there's discouragement, there's defeat, there's affliction, and there's heartache. And all of those things can wear us down. They not only can wear you down, they'll wear you out. Yet, in the midst of all of those things, we can live in a state of security, a state of knowledge, a state of confidence, and an assurance. All is well. We see that in this seventh saying. All is well. All is well. Living life in communion with God, bringing ourselves to God, focused upon God, results in a calm that this world knows nothing about. And that's, we see that in these words. First of all, again, there's a communion with God. There's a bringing ourselves to God. There's a focus upon God. And the result of this is there is an inward calm. All is well. I mean, you focus upon this world today. If that is your focus, there is no way that you can come out of that and say all is well. It's not going to happen. But you look at everything and you focus upon God. And all is well. All is well. Thirdly, there is a word and an act of committal. Again, we hear him say, Father, into thy hands I commend my spirit. And we see him there upon the cross, and he gave up the ghost. Those are words, and that is an act of committal. Committal to God. Knowing that God is in complete control, one does not have any difficulty whatsoever committing all things to Him. The key is coming to the realization that He is in control. That's the key. But notice, Father, into thy hands I commend my spirit. Is there ever a time when those words are inappropriate? Is there ever a time in our lives when those words are unnecessary? Never. Though it is always appropriate to commend ourselves to God, it is always necessary. Our lives ought to be a confession and an expression of these words. Our lives ought to be speaking these words. Father, into thy hands I commend my spirit. He gave up the ghost to who? To the Father. When Jesus says, I commend, what he's saying is, I trust my spirit into thy hands. I surrender my spirit unto thee. Knowing that his hands are all powerful, knowing that his hands encompass all things, he says, Father, I commend into thy hands, I commend my spirit. In his hands, there is safety. In his hands, we find everything that we need. So when he says, Father, into thy hands I commend my spirit, He is saying, I surrender all to your hands. Carry me onward. Carry me upward to thyself. David declared in Psalm 31 and 5, into thy hand I commit my spirit. Thou hast redeemed me, O Lord God, of truth. This is how to live. Commending our spirits unto God. This is how to die. Commending ourselves unto God. Committing all to God. That's how to live. That's how to live every single day. And if you and I live that way every day, when it comes time to die, that's what we'll do. We'll commit ourselves to God. We'll leave all in His hands. Again, life consists of responsibilities. Life consists of opportunities and decisions and choices. And life consists of goals and aims and hopes and friends and enemies and relationships, families and careers. And all of this takes place in a variety of places and under a variety of circumstances. And there are times of joy, and there are times of strength, and there are times of victory. And there are times of darkness, and there are times of weakness, and there are times of trials and struggles, and there are times of sorrows. And there are times of discouragement and defeat. And there are times of uncertainty and fear. But it needs to be our habit of life. Into thy hands I commend my spirit. It needs to be our life to commit ourselves unto God. Now you go to the cross in our text, and by the time you get to our text, men had done all they could to destroy the body of Jesus. He is going to die physically. Yet his first concern is not about his body. He says, I commend my spirit. I commend my spirit. He is in excruciating pain. But that is not his primary concern. I commend my spirit. We have physical needs. We have legitimate physical concerns. But we are not to be obsessed or distracted with our physical needs and our physical concerns. But our soul and our spirit must always be the priority. I commend my spirit. He committed himself into God's hands. And all that we understand, this is how to live. This is how to live. Commit yourself into God's hands, no matter what happens. No matter how bad it looks. No matter how bad it seems, the very first thing you ought to do is commit yourself to God. And continue to do that throughout the whole process. Committing our spirits unto God. Notice also that Jesus said this, verse 46. Jesus had cried with a loud voice. This was not the last gasp of a dying victim. He cried this with a loud voice. This is the voice of one who saw that all this suffering was an honor. It was a joy. And oh, may we understand that it is our privilege, it is our opportunity It is our joy, it is our honor to fully commit to God. It's not a bad thing to fully commit to God. That's a joy, that's an honor. That's something to be said in a loud voice. I command myself into thy hands. All who were around that cross heard Jesus say that. Said it with a loud voice. It was a voice that penetrated everything else that was going on at that time around the cross. Lastly, we have here a word and an action of acclamation. Father, into thy hands I commend my spirit. That is a loud, eager expression of praise. And it is also spoken in anticipation of victory. Again, we cannot say it enough. This is not the last or the dying gasp of a victim. This is one who is victorious. This is the loud cry of a Savior. It is the loud cry of a Redeemer who goes out to conquer death for His people. When Jesus gave up the ghost, He was conquering death for you and I. Jesus is about to lay down His life. But before He does, there is a loud note of victory. Father, I come into Thy hands. I commend my spirit. That is spoken in a tone of victory. He's praising God. We are to live our life praising God. We are to live our life anticipating victory. No matter what's going on, the victory has already been won. The victory is ours. We need to live the victory and anticipate that victory. We read that after He said with a loud voice, Father, into thy hands I commend my spirit, that He gave up the ghost. That's victory. May I say He didn't drop His head? Because prior to that, if you read, He bowed His head. There's a big difference between bowing your head and dropping your head. Big difference. He was victorious through it all. Living life saturated with communion with God, prayer unto God, focus upon God, living a life in full confidence with God, enough confidence to say, Father, I commit myself into thy hands. That's a life of victory. That's a life of victory. And we as God's people, we have temptations. We have sinful tendencies. We have weaknesses. We have trials. We have difficulties. And we're always confronted by these things. And we're confronted by things that threaten to destroy us. But Jesus here gives us an example of how to live. How to live the victory. And though we live in a postmodern world filled with evil, filled with the agenda of Satan, and filled with dysfunction on every hand, we already have the victory. And we need to live it. We need to live like we have the victory. As children of God, we can march victoriously through this life. We already have the victory. Claim it. Claim it. Claim it in Christ and live it. So Jesus here in his last words and his very last act gives us an example on how we ought to live. The best way to begin a day is to commit yourself unto God. Commit yourself unto God. Don't wait until things, till you consider things hopeless, and then commit yourself. Commit yourself unto God at the beginning of every day. Close the day committing yourself unto God. Live your life committing yourself unto God. And if you and I have warning that we're going to die very soon, we may not, we may just drop dead and that's it. But if we have warning, once we live our life committing ourselves to God, I believe the dying will do the same. Because I believe people die pretty much the way they live. I've seen people live lives cursing God, and I've seen them go out the same way. And there's nothing sadder, nothing more heartrending than seeing a man take his last breath cursing the Lord. But oh, what a way to go, commending our spirits unto God. How we ought to thank God for the pattern that He's given us to live our lives. Brother Larry, if you'd come and lead us in verse song.